Hello, welcome to the Better and Longer podcast. I'm Justin Moore, President and CEO of the Area Office on Aging. Our podcast is all about helping those age 60 and better with living better and longer. We are very honored today to have with us the longest serving Congresswoman of all time, Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I still haven't beat some of the guys, but we're working on it.
Can you tell us a little bit about how, going back to when you started in Congress, what was the initial motivation? What was the, kind of that process like for you to go from having the idea of running for Congress to actually starting to serve in Congress?
Well, I'd worked in our region here in the greater Toledo area for many years. And then I had the privilege of, in my own profession of city and regional planning, going to work for a national group that sent me around the country, okay? And in Chicago, I did special work, and I ended up being selected to work for the President of the United States back then to help cities across our country. And I did that, and after I was finished and had helped build institutions up to help to give rebirth to urban communities across this country, I decided I wanted to teach the next generation. So I went to get my doctorate in order to teach at that level. And I came home because I was going to MIT, which is in Boston, Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I came home at Thanksgiving, and the economy was horrendous. I'd never seen anything like it. Mom and I went to the store, and we were talking to some of the clerks behind the meat counter, and one of them I'd gone to grade school with. And the idea for running actually came from her, because her life was so difficult. And I knew her from grade school. And she started to cry. And I just began to think about who was voting on what in Congress and why the life here was so hard. I went back to school. But I dropped out in my second semester, the winter months. And I came back here, and the local party endorsed me to run for Congress. So it was really 19% unemployment at that time. I'd never seen anything like it. People that I knew down on their luck. Thank God it's never gotten that bad again. But there have been many, many things that have happened due to neglect at the federal level and state level that have made life very difficult for people here. So it was really seeing the world that I had known, because I grew up in this area. This is my home. And I saw such economic devastation. And we are still building back from it. I ran for office to try to help my community rebuild. We are not a capital city. We are not a financial center. We are free enterprise economy. And it is very, very hard in today's global marketplace to help your community lift itself up with so many cards stacked against you. But we're trying.
That's excellent. How has Congress, I guess, talk a little bit about your first impressions of Congress as a first-time Congresswoman, and what things are like now, similarities, differences?
Oh, well, when I first got there, obviously I was one of only 24 women. Now we have well over, I think it's 140 women now, and you count both chambers. So it's more representative. We're about 20%. Of the institution. I think racially we're more representative, ethnically we're more representative. Where we're not so representative is in representing the interests of the people who come from the working class like I do. That's where I started, and I am totally dedicated to the people of this country who work so hard for a living and struggle every day. Benefits like Social Security and Medicare, unemployment compensation. These are things that many of my colleagues, and I'm not saying they're bad people, but they've lived in families where that really didn't matter, that life was abundant and they were able to go on. But when I first arrived in Congress, there were more people like me who came from backgrounds like that than today. Most people that I work with now, obviously they have their college degrees, but they came from homes that were, you would say, economically comfortable. Not all of them, but a huge number. And it makes them very, very hard for them to identify with the struggles of ordinary people.
When you talk about ordinary people, what comes to mind for you when you hear the term age 60 and better, or senior or older adult, when you hear terms like that?
Well, what I say to myself is Medicare and Social Security are working. People are living longer. And so I think back to I was a youngster when President Lyndon Johnson passed Medicare. And I wasn't around when Franklin Roosevelt passed Social Security. But I remember our grandmother. And I was just a little girl then, but I remember when she became ill and how limited the choices were for how to help her. And we cared for her in our home. And but I see, obviously, many families facing those struggles today as relatives age or become ill. And I just have seen the transformational work of Social Security and Medicare across this country. And also, even though it's not 60 and over, the Affordable Care Act. When we started passing that under the Obama administration, 20% of the American people had no insurance at all. We've ratcheted that down to 8%. That means children are healthier, their parents are healthier, they have a shot at life and a better life. And so I'm a Democrat. One of the things Democrats have always fought for is the dignity of people as they age and the right of the American people to have health insurance that is affordable, and that is not easy.
When you talk about health insurance and the important role that it plays in helping individuals with not only their health, but also their longevity, what comes to mind is in Northwest Ohio, when we look across our 10-county service area here, 150 miles across, and we at the Area Office on Aging care about helping people live better and longer. So we wanted to find out in our neck of the woods, if you will, what is the best practice? Where are people living the longest? And we found in the DeVoe neighborhood in West Toledo that people are living to be an average age of 84. And then we wanted to find out where people are living the least long and in our service area. And it's less than 4 miles away in the Vistula neighborhood where individuals are only living to be age 62. So by traveling less than 4 miles, individuals are losing a generation of life. Talk a little bit about how, and one of the things that we noticed in comparing census data between those two neighborhoods is that 6% of individuals in Vistula do not have any kind of health insurance, and it's less than 1% in West Toledo and the DeVoe neighborhood where people are living to be 84. Talk a little bit about what strikes you in hearing that information about that longevity gap that exists in our community.
Depending on where you live says a lot. I just finished reading a story this morning about Cancer Alley in the state of Louisiana and how many people have cancer there because of where they live, right? Mm-hmm. And what they're breathing in every day, bad fumes and so forth. So years ago, there were many, many enterprises in Toledo. People worked hard. We have a very, very strong work ethic in our community, but they worked in situations that were extremely dangerous. And they lived proximate to where they worked. People didn't have cars. A lot of times they walked to work, right? What we've seen over the years also is we have oxygen deserts in many places where there aren't enough trees to produce enough oxygen. And Toledo qualifies as one of those places, which is why we brought in funding this year to plant 10,000 trees in oxygen deserts here in the city of Toledo, and are working on tree planting all across this region to help with the purity of Lake Erie, restoring its purity, and also to hold more water as we receive more rain with climate change. So you have to look at the neighborhood in which you live, and you have to think about what's around you and where the air, the oxygen, comes from. Oxygen comes from plants. And that's why a lot of times when you go in the metro parks, people go, oh, this is so wonderful. Yeah, the oxygen levels are higher. The trees are producing oxygen. And there are many places where there are no trees. I could name some of them. You can think about it. I'll give everybody a little driving tour here. You know, you go to some places where there are factories in our community, and there are no trees at all. And that tells you it's an oxygen-short region. And when the winds blow, it carries whatever's there somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to be downwind from places that are producing fumes that aren't clean. This is hard to do in an industrialized society. We become much more conscious of that now. But you have lots of neighborhoods where we could do much better at planting trees. The city of Toledo is trying. The Lucas County Soil and Water Conservation District is trying. They've been handing out trees. You don't have to even pay a lot of money. You can get trees very, very simply. And frankly, you can raise your own trees. I got trees growing in my yard right now, and I've been handing them out to people. And maple trees, trees that are native to this region, to help produce more oxygen. We could do much better here on that front because our region does have a cancer rate, for example, and a lung conditions that are related to asthma and other conditions that come from breathing in fumes that are unhealthy. We have a higher average than other parts of the country. So we have to work harder at this.
I know one thing that when speaking about agriculture, one thing that when we ask individuals that are living in the Vistula neighborhood, what is it that they most need and how, what role, if any, can the Area Office on Aging play in helping with that? First was meals. Second was produce. No grocery store in Vistula neighborhood. One of the challenges of individuals getting access to that healthy food and the like, getting access to produce. We've been partnering with Mobile Meals and providing a meal program at Madonna Homes, partnering with Grace Community Center to provide 200 older adults living in Vistula with fresh produce and the like. Talk a little bit about the role you see agriculture playing in health and longevity.
Well, let me just say Toledo's a unique place. We are a city in a garden. I grew up in what was called the truck garden part of our region here in Lucas County, out on the west side, and I still garden in my yard. I have four raised beds. This could be in any housing development. We connect to the city water, and we have a drip irrigation system. It's not that expensive to put in, and we plant. This could go on. I do it in the summertime. Produce probably 200 to 500 pounds of food, depending on the year and what I've planted, and we give it away, as well as use it in our house. So, but Toledo's a place, as one man said to me, who lived over in East Toledo, he goes, hey, Congresswoman, he says, he's a immigrant from Romania. He goes, I stick my finger in the ground here. I plant a seed. Anything grows. How come my neighbors don't plant things? I said, sir, I have no idea. I said, you ought to teach them how to do that because you could turn part of this plaza into a growing area. So I think what happened during the last century was that people thought that the only place you could grow food was out in the countryside somewhere. Technology has changed, and people have to think about the neighborhood in which they live, what the assets are. Do you have schools? Do you have churches? Do you have community centers? What do you have? Do you have a neglected lot somewhere? And we can work with organizations like Toledo Grows on Oneida Street. I was over on the east side in the J.D. Carter Garden earlier this spring, and AmeriCorps came in and volunteers came in from sororities helping plant over there. And I saw something I had never seen, a grafted tree that had six different kinds of apples. It was beautiful. And somebody's got to prune that. I mean, you just can't let that grow wild. But the point is, we live in an abundant place with all of our fresh water. This is such a gift. I've been in so many countries in the world where it's desert. Surviving in the desert is not easy. We live in abundance, and it's right next door to us, and we don't see it. So I'm urging our housing developments of different kinds to think about bringing some of the growing skills back in. Every school could be a production site. You can roll up these houses that are plastic. You can put them right next to the school. You could have a garden there. All it needs is a little creativity and a group of people. And I'll say, you know, when you turn 55, you turn 60, that doesn't mean your life is over. There are a whole lot of people, because we've had better diets, we have good water, that they live longer than was anticipated, right? We're going to have lots of people living well over 100 now. It's because of all of what we've done in the last century and this century to improve outcomes. So growing good food, fresh fruits and vegetables, is a no-brainer here. I think our land bank can partner with different organizations where they have empty lots, and when there's a group of willing people right in your own neighborhood. It's happening in my neighborhood with neighbors at Bandor Park out in the Reynolds Corners area, where you can find partners to help you grow healthy foods. And nothing is more healthy than fresh fruits and vegetables and herbs, especially when you grow it yourself. I just had a salad the other night. I picked all my lettuce and I, you know, turned it over. I said, this is really good and it's fresh and you do it yourself. So I'm a do-it-yourself person where possible. And I just think that for older adults, people who have experience, if you have an interest in the earth, pay attention. The Sisters of St. Francis out at their campus have a four-season poly house. I'm not saying you should build that in your neighborhood, but what they've done there is so clever. And then they have a garden right next door where they grow fruits and vegetables that they give to some of our feeding kitchens. What they've done on a thumbprint in a small amount of space that produces lots of food is amazing. It's amazing. So we're sitting in a garden. Think about that and act like it.
When you were talking about people living longer now, one thing that comes to mind is I heard a state official talk recently about two different things that were not connected, but were connected in my mind. The first was that when trying to attract workforce or when trying to attract businesses and like to invest in Ohio, that workforce is the biggest barrier. And the second thing was, as you look at the ages of Ohioans and five-year age groups, the largest number is individuals that are 60 to 64. And for me, those two are really connected to one another, that maybe instead of looking for those 20-somethings, 30-somethings to come to Ohio or, from out of state or come back to Ohio from out of state, maybe our workforce issues are right in front of our faces with the 60 to 64 population that oftentimes are unfortunately overlooked in the workforce and face age discrimination when trying to get jobs. And like, can you speak a little bit about what you feel when you hear that sometimes we fall in the trap of viewing older adults just as people that need help and fail to recognize that they're also people who can help?
What a good question. First of all, let me say that people who are that age who have worked have an ethic. And they also have a purpose. Everybody needs a purpose in life. When you have a purposeless life, you are an unhappy person, and sometimes you become a destructive person. I think one of the challenges we have in raising the next generation is to give them purpose, not just a job, but purpose. And one thing people who've reached the age of 60 have, they have discernment. They've learned a lot through their own life, and I'm amazed. You go around like Lourdes University, or you go to the senior centers. People at libraries, people want to learn. Older people want to learn everything the tech industry needs. They're curious. Not everyone, but I'm saying a lot of people do. We know that tech jobs are plentiful, and we are short here in this region. So I think people have to think about their own skills and how they can keep them active. Because if you vegetate too much, you sort of lose touch, and you have this amassed knowledge from a lifetime of work and of application. And maybe now you can turn your skills into something else. If I were not in Congress, I'd probably be in the back room of a bakery because I love to bake, but I don't have any time to do it. We need people who are involved in creating something from nothing. All right. So you bake bread or you bake pastries or you plant plants or you learn something about the tech industry. The arts is a field where many people finally can be released to use their creativity. And a lot of these folks who have had certifications as plumbers and pipe fitters and iron workers and carpenters. I got a neighbor exactly like this. And they don't recognize their own skills and knowledge. And let me give you an example. So I met a plumber who'd been in business, working in his trade for 40 years. He invented something that is so extraordinary. It's changing this continent because he realized that for 100 years, America has wasted the thermal energy under the streets. And he figured a way to put a circuit in a sewer. Now, you got to know how to do that or you electrocute yourself. But the point is, he figured it out. He is so busy now. He cannot handle the business. So the people who are 60, I say, think about something you know no one else does and make it. Do the drawing, get people to help you. The library system actually helps you bring up ideas like that. I met a woman here in Toledo. I was in a lab one day, and it was her own lab. She was running this business, and I saw this tube. And usually when I go in these labs, the tubes roll all over the floor. They roll all over the table. And this one was shaped like a trapezoid. And I said, where did you get that? And she goes, I made it. I said, you made that? I said, did you patent it? She goes, patent? Question mark. I thought, oh. So if you have worked in your life in a field, don't deny yourself the opportunity to invent what is in your head. If you are a writer, if you were a teacher, you should be writing children's books. We just lost a great artist here in Toledo, Kathy Gennesman. She was one of the greatest artists Toledo ever had, right from our heart. And she drew the most beautiful drawings of Toledo. And I'm framing each one of them and keeping those as a sign of Toledo. So if you have a talent in the arts, if you have a talent in the trades, don't shut it off. You know too much now. And when I say, they say retire, I say get a new tire. That's what retire means. And use the talents you have. Don't waste them. Don't waste them.
Let's talk a minute about motivation. I had a older family member, age 60 plus, recently mentioned to me that desires to do more, but feels a lack of motivation. What would you say motivates you? Because you're somebody who... the fire in the belly is palpable, right? What motivates you, and what would you say to that individual or similar individuals that might be age 60 and better and feel like they want to do some things but are lacking motivation?
Well, they're not focused on what they really like to do. I would spend some time talking to people, thinking about the skills that you have. Sometimes people don't see their own skills. And I was with a teacher who had a gift. Such a gift of being able to teach people who couldn't read how to read. I couldn't do that job well. I would be too impatient and wouldn't have the skills to help that individual. There are people who are, I would say to that person who isn't motivated, you haven't analyzed yourself enough yet. You haven't. And also, if you're a person who is always told what to do as opposed to creating something from your own substance, okay? Spend some time asking, you know, learning about yourself. Examine yourself. Find out where your talents are. There's all kind of books you can read about that. And every day is a good day for me, really. And I'm always trying to do something to fix up my communities that I represent, trying to help them see a better future. We just dedicated funding to invent the new bridge that will cross over the Maumee River, just north of the Turnpike, where it crosses the greatest river, the largest river that flows into the Great Lakes. And we had all the political officials there and all the transportation officials. And you look up the river and you see Toledo, and I call it the Crystal City. It just glows. And at night, the lights are all shining now. We got rid of that ugly rail bridge. I get motivated by things like that. And that we will now be able to develop all these walking trails that connect Lucas County, Wood County, the lakefront, all of our metro parks. I mean, I get excited about opportunity to make it better for everyone. And I see ways to do that. So that was my gift. And I would not be happy not doing it. I would find other things to do. But we are able to accomplish a lot together. And people have to ask themselves, maybe some people will be artists. Maybe some people will make cookies. There's a group down at the Center for Innovative Food Technology on Route 582. You can rent their kitchen for like, it's the old Herzl's Research Farm, I don't know, $50, $100 a morning. If you have a recipe you can bring up, if you like to cook, boy, think of yourself as the new Betty's Dressing or the new Willy Salsa. We have people in this community that created new products. That creates real wealth. Tony Packo's hot dog sauce. Think of all the things we created here. Dave Fratelli brand tomato products. Those are all local products. There may be some people out there, and I've been trying to get this one lady. She makes the most delicious potato soup. I said, you need to can that. They will help you do that down there, and it'll only charge you $100 or something. They'll do all the labeling. You could sell it at the farmer's market. You can be, you know, take your talent up a peg. And I was down at the farmer's market a couple weeks ago, and I ran into some women, and they were selling coffee, delicious coffee. It's all homemade, all home, what are they, when they heat the beans and all that, they've got a word for that. And I looked at all this creativity. So don't deny your own creativity is what I would say. Great. Don't deny your own creativity.
And when looking at your time in Congress, let's talk past, present, future. What in the past is something that really is a source of pride or something that, you know, you feel a great sense of accomplishment about during your time? What's something kind of present day that you're really proud of or excited about that you're working on? And as you look to the future, what's something that really energizes you about what's next?
All right, let's look at some big things, all right? So when I first got to Congress, my first most important vote in April of 1983 was refinancing Social Security for the next generation. And we are in that now. And now we have to do it again. And we will. So we have a bill, H.R. 2100. It takes care of the windfall and it also refinances Social Security for the future. I wish they'd brought it up last year, but, you know, we got a situation in Washington right now that's a little atypical. So we got to get through this. American people will. They're smart. They'll see it all. So, then in terms of actual delivery to the home front, making sure that we still have an automotive industry, being a part of the rebirth of the steel industry, this doesn't just happen in a day. This takes a lot of effort, working with private companies, trying to deal with the international markets. But the fact that we still are able to produce both industry here and agriculture in our region, we can sustain ourselves and fresh water. That's still a challenge. I won't go into all of it, but it's extremely complex and very, very expensive. We've got to take care of Lake Erie and all the tributaries that flow into it and the largest watershed in the Great Lakes, the western basin of the Maumee and Lake Erie. Very complex problem. So I'm working on that. I can't do it alone. I need the help of a lot of others. Then in terms of what people see, the World War II Memorial, that took us 17 years almost. In Washington, D.C., the most important memorial recognizing the greatest contribution of those who lived in the 20th century, and that is the victory of liberty over tyranny. And they did it. And we have had the longest period of peacetime history in the history of the country. And they set up the institutions, the UN, NATO, all these creations that never existed before in order to build a safer and better world, a more democratic world. So I would say that that memorial recognizes the most unselfish generation. They call them the greatest generation. I call them the most unselfish generation. So that's a big one. Then in terms of our own community, you can see the Veterans Glass City Skyway that hangs above the Maumee River, right at where all the big ships come down toward the shipyards. That took us 16 years to do. So the achievements are multiple. And the idea for the World War II Memorial was given to me by a man named Roger Durbin from Berkey, Ohio. All right, so it's a Lucas County idea. We gave it to America. All right, the bridge we built here, we didn't get a penny of state money. It was all federal. And we got it done right. We didn't want some old rusty bucket bridge. We wanted something that would mark us as a crystal city, and we have. And so everything we do, we try to make it better. The park systems that we have, the Ottawa Wildlife Refuge, we're about to, both the Ottawa Wildlife Refuge and the Cedar Point Refuge are likely to have 100,000 visitors this weekend because it's Mother's Day, and the mothers come and their families and the birds come, and they come from all over the world. We created a destination that capitalizes on our beauty as a region, the southernmost rim of the entire Great Lakes. The birds like it here, and so do the people. And so we found the right place. And being able to build a visitor center at the Ottawa Wildlife Refuge to welcome all these people, that was a big accomplishment. So we can go, the list is very, very long, but trying to build the economy forward and taking care of the social needs of the people and renewing their confidence in our region. I worry most about our education and the University of Toledo. The school systems we have, and we just were able to get the community college at Toledo reopened. This is profound. And I want to say to all your older listeners, you go there and teach. You go figure out a way to use the skills you have. Help this younger generation understand some of the jobs of the present and the future. We're going to need you in every field, in every field. We had been robbed of a community college here for three generations. I think I nagged enough people that they finally got tired of it. But now we have to really make it into something. And we are on that trajectory now.
If you, when you walked into Congress for the first time, did you think being the longest serving congresswoman would be a distinction you would earn?
I never even thought that. I thought I would get everything done in about 15 years, 16 years. When we did the World War II Memorial, which every American wanted, and we didn't, we paid for it by donations and selling coins, memorial coins for the, I couldn't believe it took 16 years. And I thought, now I really understand Congress. And it is true. It took us 16 years for the Veterans Glass City Skyway. I still haven't gotten a veterans hospital here, a medical center here. We've gotten an outpatient clinic that has expanded services. But it is so hard at the national level to make things happen here because Congress is basically dominated by the coasts. And we are the Great Lakes coast. They don't see us. We're outnumbered. And frankly, some of those coasts have a lot more money than we do. So they have, you know, a heavy hammer they can hit. Think about this. Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader, was from California. And she was followed by Kevin McCarthy, a Republican, from California. So that tells you a little bit about how the place operates. So you have to really be agile inside the institution to make things happen for a region that is underrepresented in the Great Lakes, in the heartland here. The exciting part is we're building forward. And, for example, our largest trading partner is Canada. And I'm looking for a way, I haven't solved this problem yet, but how do we integrate the rail systems of Canada and our region here, both for passenger rail and for freight rail? How do we look to multimodal? I was given an idea. I just got to share it with you because it's pretty exciting. But I've been struggling with how do we get all this cargo from United States and Canada back and forth across the lake? These bridges won't be enough because the population's growing and the trade is growing. I said, could we build a channel under the lake like they did in Europe? It's about the same number of miles, and we'll move a lot of cargo. We'll get rid of all the fumes. We'll do this. We'll be so much more efficient as a region because we share the lake with Canada. And somebody said, who's involved with NASA, Congresswoman, you're thinking the wrong way. I said, how's that? He goes, you need to be thinking about vertical airlift for the 21st century. I said, oh. Vertical airlift from the southern tip of Lake Erie to the northern coast of Lake Erie. I wonder how we would make those payloads heavy. And I was talking to scientists from NASA who are building the Mars landing gear, right? They're the parts of the lift vehicles that will go to Mars. I thought, my gosh, if we can go to Mars, we can go from the south coast to Erie to the north coast if we just figure this out from a propulsion standpoint. So I'm just saying that to your listeners. There got to be at least three people out there thinking about this with me after this show. But it was a very interesting conversation.
If you today could speak some words of wisdom to that young lady 40 plus years ago that was walking into Congress for the first time, what words of wisdom would you have for her?
My words of wisdom would be, know the place you're representing very well. I was given that gift before I got there because this is our home community, and I worked in it for many years. Know the raw clay you're working with. Know the people. As a city planner, you get into every neighborhood, into every borough, so I was given that gift. So know the place you're representing and never forget it. Don't get all distracted by everything else that goes on in Washington. Number two, pick your committees very carefully. Look at what your strengths are and what the needs of your community are and see if you can juxtapose those. I first went on a committee that's now called Financial Services. That's a whole nother story. But I got on appropriations. That's where I could really do something for our community in the country, and I am. Take some time, get to know some of the members on your committee. You have to start on your committee and subcommittees. Do a good job, even if you don't get the committee you want right away. It took me 12 years to get the committee I really wanted. Okay, you can't give up. You got to persevere. And in Congress, that is the key word. Underline, persevere. 435 people in the House, and in the Senate, 100. 535 people who have to get a majority to do anything in the country. So I said to one high school class, think about that. I'm 1/535th, and sometimes it's really frustrating. And this young student in the front row out of Springfield High School said to me, "That's okay, Congresswoman. That's better than being 1/340,000,000th. And I thought, I learned from my constituents every day of all ages. Wasn't that a clever statement by that student? So know your community, pick your committees carefully, persevere on them as time goes on, and bring home the results of your work. If your people don't benefit, it's not worth being there. Go get another job.
What parting words do you have for our listeners today that we have not covered? Something that you feel really passionate about and really think is beneficial to share with our listeners today?
Well, first of all, happy Mother's Day, happy Grandmother's Day, happy Great-Grandmother's Day to all fathers. Happy Father's Day, happy Grandfather's Day, and happy Great-Grandfather's Day, which will be coming up in June. Never underestimate the power of your family. Your relatives, extended relatives, one of the things that's happened to America is our families have, because of the job market of the last 30 years, 35 years, our people have been scattered. And that is, in my opinion, harmful to the republic. I'm watching people flying everywhere to be with their grandparents. I just flew back on the plane with a woman whose grandchildren are in Virginia, and she lives in Ottawa Hills. Stay in touch with them. The most important lessons I learned in my life, I learned from my family and through my family. And they walk with me every day. My neighbors, the places, the people who were so kind are teachers. Teachers never undervalue those personal relationships with adults who can teach you and guide you. And I would encourage people who are 60, you are asking 60 and over, don't ever underestimate the influence you can have on a child. In this community, and it's repeated across our country, here in Toledo region, we have between 2,000 and 4,000 children who have no home to go to. They're homeless, they're rootless, they come to the schools, but if you can befriend a child who's lonely and help them learn how to read, you'll go to heaven. If you have time to figure out a way to work with some of these forgotten children or children who feel that they're not as good because maybe they get a B rather than an A, well, you know what? Help them know their worth. Teach them something. Teach them something you know. Baking cookies with children, you think that's simple? That's a big deal. There's this one drawing I have, Safe and Sound in My Grandmother's Kitchen. Don't ever underestimate that. So I'm just saying, know your worth. Thank you so very much for being such kind, kind people. We live in a kind community. In D.C., if I come out of a gas station in my car, I got to stop because they'd run me over, right? Here, once in a while, people will stop so you can get out. They don't even know it's me, right? They don't know I'm a congresswoman. There's something here that's very good we mustn't lose.
I agree. Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your words of wisdom, the inspiration to our listeners, and for all your service. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you. Just thank you for your service and the Area Office on Aging. It's the best one in the United States of America.
Listeners, thank you for joining us today on the Better and Longer podcast. We hope that you will continue to live better and longer. Thank you.